Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkush, and along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkush, it is our great pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly on the radio, where every week we try and bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, both on and off the field.
How in the world are the Cowboys going to replace Sean Lee?
And are the Ravens in even more trouble after a horrible offseason?
We'll have it all for you right now on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us again this week on Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkush. I am joined, as I am each week, by Eric Edholm from Shutdown Corner at yahoosports.com. Best read anywhere on the web 24/7. Get to yahoosports.com for Shutdown Corner. And Arthur Arkush, now with Chicago Football, chicagofootball.com, and USA Today Sports Weekly, covering the NFC North last season. We'll see what the assignment is this year. But right now, we actually start with the whole NFL, not just the division guys. As the talk of the week is an interview and a visit with DeMaurice Smith, the executive director of the NFLPA, who appears to be taking off the gloves and going after Roger Goodell a little bit, letting everybody know how unhappy, according to him, the players are, that Jimmy Irsay, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, has not been dealt yet. He lays the blame for no HGH testing as part of the NFL's drug program squarely at the feet of Goodell, and warns you can talk all you want about expanded playoffs, but it's not going to happen without a negotiation with the players. Now, Roger Goodell has said in the past, Eric, that he doesn't think they need the players' position to expand the playoffs, so maybe that's the interesting point to start with.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Smith's argument is that adding games, you know, even if it is only two games to the entire, you know, system here, it represents a change in working conditions. So he's saying that that is a precondition that has to be negotiated with the players' union. There has to be a proposal. So the owner's view is, hey, if 24 out of our 32 guys vote for this, it's happening. And they're going to talk about it at the fall meeting in Detroit. They're probably going to vote on it. They've sort of set the table for that by predicting that it will pass at some point. So Dee and the rest of the union, I think, are going to be ready to counter with this suggestion that, hey, it's got to go through us too.
Well, and Arthur, what's interesting here is that there is a specific carve-out in the current CBA that expanding the regular season by more than 16 games needs to be run by the Players Association, by the players. That is written in that language, not that language exactly, but that language does exist in the CBA. A language about expanding the playoffs does not, and that is how Dee Smith has seized on this change in the workplace condition clause. And it seems a little hard to argue with his point on that.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I mean, it can be perhaps a little bit of a loophole. I mean, as the way you describe it, certainly I can see how that's, you know, maybe the NFL owners take that, the exact language, the semantics of it, if you will. But no, I think that it certainly would represent a change in work conditions, obviously. I mean, these guys are, you know, putting their bodies on the line and going out there and risking their health two more times than they normally would. So I don't know where this is going. As Eric said, certainly the owners have sort of laid the groundwork to suggest that this is happening and that they will have the votes needed. But it sounds like it's going to get ugly. It's too bad we couldn't make it past 3 years, not even close, of the new labor agreement before there's this type of strife between the two sides.
Eric, the players are pissed. We're not on cable, but I think I can say that on the radio. I guess I just did. You know, they're upset that Jim Irsay has not been punished for his indiscretions. And their point, Dee Smith's point, is that the players, you know, Goodell can rush to judgment and do whatever he wants, but with it's an owner that they're not rushing and that he feels there's special treatment going on here. I'm going to take exception with that one. I Goodell has said we want to get all the facts. As I understand it, Alden Smith hasn't been punished yet for several indiscretions that happened well in advance of what happened with Jim Irsay here. So this just seems like a preemptive strike. This is the players trying to make a case that owners will get treated differently, and they may have egg on their face on this one if, in fact, Goodell comes down hard on Irsay.
You know, they probably have some points, but I think they're aiming in the wrong direction, as you pointed out. I mean, if they said something, and we talked about this a little last week, you know, where, hey, why is Jim Irsay allowed to go back to work while this investigation, this fact-gathering process is taking place? That I could sort of understand, okay? It's not like Jim Irsay needs the money. Yes, he wants his fingerprints on the team, but he had a daughter who capably ran things while he was out. you know, and obviously he's continuing to get help for himself, et cetera. But, you know, with the charges formally being, you know, coming down a few days after the owners' meetings, I mean, now they're out there, two misdemeanor crimes. You know, we'll find out what eventually his penalty, if anything, will be. But, you know, their point, too, is that, hey, Goodell hasn't always had needed those charges in order to assess discipline in the past. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of see it from the player's perspective, but I also know that, like you said, it's not across the board where he's punished every single player in this circumstance or at this point of the system.
All right, guys, and you know, you look at this situation of the commissioner dealing out punishment. There is a report as we tape this show at the end of this week that the NFL is going to suspend Arizona linebacker Darrell Washington for the entire season. Now, this is a player who's had previous run-ins with the personal conduct code. We do know the outcome, the ramifications of all that has happened. He's been dealt with. He's had his legal proceedings, and the commissioner waited. He got all the information. But if, in fact, this turns out to be a year-long suspension, this is about as serious as it gets, Eric, for violation of the personal conduct policy.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know if it was going to be one game or 16 games for him, and obviously we got to, you know, confirm these reports before we're totally sure about it. But, you know, this is a huge blow to the Cardinals. I mean, just from a football standpoint, but obviously it's going to raise questions as well as to, you know, does this strengthen the player's case as far as the Ursae stuff is concerned? So kind of a wild deal if this ends up being true.
It is interesting, Arthur. Darrell Washington, probably the least known, I want to say, all-pro linebacker in the NFL. He's been an outstanding link in that Arizona defense. And yet, if he gets a year, how much is enough for Ursae?
It's a great question. We'll have to wait and see on Ursae. And the Cardinals, of course, are still trying to replace Carlos Dansby, another Pro Bowl linebacker on the inside. So just really sad. It's kind of in the same lines of Josh Gordon, just an incredibly talented player who we could potentially not be seeing at all this year. You hope these young guys can figure it out and find a way to get their careers back on track.
All right, guys, we're going to take a very quick commercial break, but we've got lots more news at the team level. The New Orleans Saints have a problem with a very expensive free agent. We'll talk about that in a moment. Eric Edholm, Arthur Arkush, and Hub Arkush bringing you Pro Football Weekly on the radio. Guys, if I was the New Orleans Saints, particularly Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton, I might not be all that happy right now. You spend $54 million on a safety in Jairus Byrd, and it was announced earlier this week that he has had back surgery. Now, Sean Payton has said that they decided to do the surgery now because they believe he will be ready to go in training camp. Payton was careful to explain that they knew about the concerns in Byrd's back before they signed the deal. Arthur, I hear him. I'm not saying that Sean Payton's not telling the truth, but when you're spending $54 million, and as I recall, about 25 of this or 26 is guaranteed, I'd be a little surprised if they realized the guy was going to be having back surgery 2 months later.
Yeah, this is certainly concerning, especially at his position, the way he runs around the field and is, you know, counted on so much to just, you know, put so much stress on his body, be such an active, rangy player. You know, some interesting quotes in that story in which the surgery was, you know, reported. Payton saying that he doesn't need to have the surgery, but both him and the team are opting for him to have it now. They say, you know, he is going to miss the regular OTA portion and minicamp portion, and they're just hoping to have him back for camp. So, you know, he dealt with the back problem at times last season. If it was in season, it would be more symptomatic and they'd deal with it. So if you're trying to get it out of the way now and be 100%, I mean, I certainly understand that. But I just, you know, I've heard you say it before. I've heard us all say it on this show. There's really no back surgery that isn't serious. So when they say he doesn't need to have it, I guess I kind of wonder about that.
Yeah, as a veteran of some pretty serious back surgery, allow me to interpret for Sean Payton. Nobody has back surgery they don't need. You don't do that. What he obviously meant to say was that he didn't need to do it right now, that they could have tried other treatments, but that eventually it was going to have to get fixed. And so, Eric, I assume what he meant to say is that we think the long-range plan is better if we get it cleared up and it's completely successful right now.
Yeah, right. Like you said, elective back surgery aren't words you often put together. But yeah, I mean, that makes the most sense. I mean, it does sound like the timetable is reasonable. That's why they did it. I mean, look, they obviously made a huge splash on a player that a lot of people didn't think they'd get involved with, you know, to help the turnover problem. And this was a very good statistical defense last year, top five in yards allowed, points, et cetera. I mean, they were very good in that department. But the turnover problem was really the biggest issue, and I think Byrd is the centerpiece of that. Down the stretch, they weren't creating turnovers whatsoever. It was a complete opposite of what they did in 2009. they want to get back. And Bird's, you know, he's got 22 picks, 11 fumbles last year. So this is the guy they want sort of being the centerpiece of that defense from that safety spot.
Yeah, I think a couple things to realize here, folks, and I'm not going to practice medicine without a license. I do practice law without a degree sometimes, but no medicine. Back surgery is much more successful today than it was 5 or 10 years ago. They're not all successful. They're not all the same, but it is not impossible, depending on the level of work they did and what discs they did, that he could be back working out in 4 to 6 weeks and ready to play football in 8 to 10 weeks. It's happened in the NFL in recent years. We don't want to overstate the problem here. It just seems really strange that it happens with a guy who just got a $54 million deal, and it came out of the blue. Nobody knew this was coming until it was suddenly announced this past week. Doug Baldwin has been rewarded by the world champion Seattle Seahawks, Eric, and this one is not surprising. It's interesting what the Seahawks are doing here, though. Baldwin actually gets a 2-year extension. He was not an unrestricted free agent. There was a year left on a deal that's going to pay him just under $2 million. They did put the highest tender offer on him in restricted free agency. So now his contract covers the next 3 years, the 2014, 15, and 16 seasons, for $13 million, $9 million guaranteed. Clearly not starting wide receiver, well, starting wide receiver, not number one wide receiver money.
Yeah.
It's actually about a 2.5 or a 3. But let's be honest, that's about who Baldwin is, and what's interesting about it from the Seahawks' perspective is they're not afraid to take a chance that this guy continues to be to improve, and he will be an unrestricted free agent after the 2016 season when he'll still be just 28 years old.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good deal for Baldwin, I think. There were some people who felt like he may just sort of play this thing out and, you know, play under the tender and then, you know, try to test the market next year or something like that. But he clearly fits the Seahawks mold. I mean, undrafted guy, kind of scrapped his way onto the roster, you know, outproduced expectations, that sort of thing. And with Golden Tate on, I mean, you'd have to think that he's actually probably going to move outside. Percy Harvin, if he's healthy, will be in the slot, but they love that flexibility with him. And he's so clutch. I mean, that's the word that you probably heard more than any in the press conference when his name was brought up yesterday or the other day. You know, I mean, the fourth quarter catches, the first downs, the key conversions, all those things, and the fact that he can play so many spots in their offense.
Arthur, it's going to be interesting to see how the Seahawks defend this championship. They've been very proactive in locking up Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas. Now they've got Baldwin back. Remember, they spent a lot of money on Percy Harvin last year. They re-signed Michael Bennett. They have also lost significant talent on the defensive and offensive lines, and they're just planning on young people stepping in and filling those gaps.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we've seen what they've been able to do in terms of filling gaps with young guys before. So, you know, if anyone should be confident in their own abilities, it should be the Seahawks. I mean, I've said this is kind of the interesting second stage. We've seen the player acquisition from Carroll and Schneider, and now we've seen the start of them, you know, finding ways to lock these guys up. So I think you have to be impressed with what they've done so far. And just kind of, you know, going off what Eric said, I think the clutch aspect, the reliability aspect with Doug Baldwin is something that's so important for Russell Wilson right now, something he doesn't have really elsewhere in that receiving core. I think that shouldn't be understated here.
Part of what makes the secondary so dangerous on defense, the pressure up front. They did lose Red Bryant. They lost Chris Clemens. Admitted on the backside of their careers, but still big contributors last year. Can't wait to see how the Seahawks rebound. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish. And gentlemen, it has been a difficult, difficult offseason for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, I'm just going to read this rap sheet. I don't know what else we can call it, but it began in mid-February with the simple assault charges against Ray Rice. Everybody, I think, knows that story by now if they're an NFL fan. It was just a week later that backup wide receiver Deontay Thompson was charged with possession of marijuana, and a couple weeks after that, that backup offensive lineman Ja Reed arrested on misdemeanor charges of battery. Early March, things didn't get much better when running back Lorenzo Talaferro was arrested for breaking window of a cab. That was actually last Saturday. Early March were the Ja Reed problems. And then over the Memorial Day weekend, Jimmy Smith, Jacoby Jones, and Bernard Pierce are asked to leave a bar, apparently causing a bit of a ruckus over the Memorial Day holiday. John Harbaugh finally spoke this week, Arthur, and he's not a happy camper. And what interested me in particular about Coach Harbaugh's comments He said he's disappointed, obviously, in the actions of a number of his players. He did point out still a small minority of his players, he said, but what he's particularly disappointed about is that 90% of these problems seem to be alcohol-related, some other percentage pot-related, and, you know, these are potential causes for punishment from the NFL, and we're talking about a significant segment of this Ravens roster at this point.
Yeah, no question. And in some cases, some really critical guys, obviously Ray Rice, they are counting on this year, have really been behind him ever since this ugly situation began. And of course, Jimmy Smith, you know, a top corner and one of their most important defenders. So it's an ugly situation. There's no question. John Harbaugh said he prides himself on how he has cleaned things up since coming on board since 2008. I think largely that has been the case. But there's no doubt, you know, the volume of issues that they've had this offseason, seeing a name like Jacoby Jones in there. We don't really know the severity. I think they were just getting a little out of hand in public. There were no charges filed or anything like that, but it's just another embarrassing, you know, alcohol-related incident for Jacoby Jones. You know, not his first. He's had several of them, and just interesting to see how they handle this. John Harbaugh also said that no one is guaranteed a spot on this roster. You know, in the case of Jimmy Smith and Ray Rice, you don't think anything drastic is happening, but, you know, Bernard Pierce was as bad as Ray Rice was last season, and like I said, Jacoby Jones, you know, has been valuable as a return man, but has never really kind of carved out his niche as a wide receiver for the most part with this team.
Yeah, apparently Jacoby didn't learn his lesson from Sweet Pea last year. But,
right.
you know, guys, let's be clear here. These are kids, or at least young men in their 20s. Nobody is guilty of a heinous crime here. They're for the most part guilty of stupidity, although we can't really get our arms around what went on with Ray Rice and his now wife, at the time his fiance. Eric, what's interesting to me is that this is the Ravens, that this is Ozzie Newsome's team, the Wizard of Oz. And the Ravens have been known at times to take a chance on players, you know, who might have a little rougher edges because they're great football players. But what they've always been able to do is develop them into outstanding citizens as well. And it is fair, you know, the fact that John Harbaugh spoke about it, I think, makes it fair to discuss the concern that this has become not epidemic, but somewhat, you know, happening somewhat often in this Ravens organization.
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack with this one. I mean, it's really kind of fascinating. I can think back to last year when Ray Lewis, who's now a football commentator, sort of suggested that, you know, this locker room, you know, and this was during an 8-8 season, or what would become an 8-8 season, didn't have a natural leader. And it's kind of interesting to look back on those comments, and a lot of what Ray says seems to be, you know, off the cuff, but he may have a point. I mean, John Harbaugh might be the leader, and he might have to be the guy who ties this thing up and cuts it off, because there is no Ray Lewis right now. Joe Flacco, the quarterback, stays out of the limelight. I mean, he's a quiet guy. Haloti Ngata, same thing. You've had Ray Rice, one of the leaders, sort of, you know, had to have his share of disappointment this offseason. Terrell Suggs, I mean, you know, there's another guy who's had off-the-field issues. Steve Smith, they brought in. He's been tied to controversy in the past. So, you know, their most vocal guys aren't necessarily the guys that you want sort of rallying the locker room at all times. Now, can you make it a positive force? Yes, I think you can. I think you can turn this whole thing around. But interesting that both Jim and John have had to deal with these kind of situations. I consider them both top five head coach. I think they're outstanding. But this is an added challenge that both of them are going to have to face this year.
And it's reasonable to point out, had this happened last year, this club was, you know, celebrating an unexpected Super Bowl championship. But this year, coming off an 8-8 season, I don't think a lot of folks saw this one coming. We're going to take another quick commercial break, but there is news out of the nation's capital. Well, it's not politics. Or is it? We'll talk about it. It's Dan Snyder and his Washington Redskins. We are, and it is time to take a look at the latest out of Washington, the use of the name Redskins. Yes, it's over 80 years old. Yes, Daniel Snyder, it's offensive to some people. Now, the question is Dan Snyder to blame? No, of course he's not. Is there something the Redskins should or need to do? That's not for me to decide, but there is a better way for them to handle it. That much I feel safe in commenting as a commentator. The Washington Redskins have decided to take on the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid, that he is going to be the face of their argument after they received a letter signed by over 50 U.S. senators asking them to do something about the name. And what they did was try and start a social media campaign in which they said, tweet your Redskin pride. aside and let Harry Reid know that you do not have a problem with the name, something to that effect. I'm not getting the quote exactly from the tweet. And what happened is they set off a series of social media tweets saying, we're not proud of the Redskins, you shouldn't do it, and you got to change it. So, Eric, what are these guys thinking? I mean, how Daniel Snyder finds ways to take bad situations and make them worse.
Yeah, I mean, look, social media is still something that's very much evolving and in its infancy, I'm sure. I mean, obviously, we're just sort of figuring out the rules, I think, with some of this stuff. But when people who run these things try to do this, where it's like, okay, let's flip this really controversial situation on its head and open it up to the world on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, they know they're going to get thrown back in their face. And if they don't, they're incompetent. They should be fired. They're not doing a good job at what they do. So there are better ways to combat this situation. Look, I mean, if you're going to go head on against the critics of the Redskins name, that's your choice. You're going to face the criticism that comes with it. But I think doing so in a smarter manner is probably the way to go about this.
Yeah, and let's be clear here, guys. There's nothing political about our conversation.
Exactly.
I mean, the letter, my understanding is it was bipartisan. It was mainly Democratic. Harry Reid, I believe, is just one of the guys who signed it. He happens to be the majority leader. But again, does anybody in this organization think, Arthur, because it is social media, and there's nothing you can do in social media without ending up with both sides of the coin, and getting people to voice their displeasure with the Redskin name does not play to the benefit of the Washington franchise.
Right, and like Eric said, however, you know, the decision was arrived upon that this could somehow be a good idea is just really alarming that anyone could have that thought process go through their head. But yeah, no, it's an issue we've talked about a lot on here, one that's not going away, obviously. What I found to be interesting, and actually something I believe Eric also mentioned on last week's show, was just kind of taking exception to how the Redskins continue to talk about how the majority of Native Americans aren't offended by the name, and they keep using that word majority and kind of referencing an outdated study that, attempted to quantify what the level of discontent or anything like that is. And it's something that actually Bruce Allen, now that the new president of the Redskins just got that promotion, also referenced in his letter and his rebuttal that the overwhelming majority of Native Americans aren't offended by this. So I just think that that's something that's become a little bit outdated, a little bit hard to quantify, and is also not really doing them any justice, kind of going off of these things that just seem to not really be as viable as maybe they even once were or never were.
Yeah, Dan Snyder gives promotions for that stuff. That's interesting. We'll blow more on this in the publisher's pen, I think. But for now, guys, let's talk about the football team. A lot of the focus at the OTAs in Washington is about the question of whether RG3 and his new buddy DeSean Jackson can become Batman and Robin. It seems to be all eyes are there. RG3, Eric, has been a little more vocal about his delight over DeSean Jackson than Jackson has been about the Redskins. He hasn't said anything negative about it, says he's happy to be there, apparently is working very hard. But my understanding is he's been a little quieter since he's arrived in Washington than he used to be in Philadelphia.
Heck, that may be a good thing. We'll see. I mean, if he's just playing, I mean, we've seen the effect he has on a football team. I mean, you know, he's the kind of guy who can catch three passes in a game and have a profound impact. You know, those three catches could go for 120 yards. Likewise, that can draw a safety away from, you know, towards him and away from the box where Alfred Morris is going for 150 yards on the ground. It can really open this offense up and be a huge development for Jay Gruden, for Robert Griffin, for everybody involved in making this a more diverse offense, really, you know, and you think about what, you know, Pierre Garçon and those guys were able to do without that deep threat last year, and it's a tough strain on them. So, yeah, I mean, I want to see Griffin's touchdown field. I want to see if he can connect with DeSean Jackson on these things. He's obviously excited, but you got to make it work and not just have him be sort of a deep guy in a decoy.
Yeah, and the people I've talked to out there tell me that right now, and this is very early, the timing, exactly what Eric's talking about, is the issue. We know that RG3 has plenty of arm. His accuracy is okay, but they've got to develop a feel for each other. That probably will happen. The last piece of this, though, Arthur, is DeSean Jackson what the Redskins really needed? If I've got my timing right on this, Jay Gruden and A.J. Green and Jermaine Gresham all arrived in Cincinnati about the same time. And what A.J. Green does is he wins contested balls. Now, the Washington Redskins don't have anybody who can do that. Pierre Garçon had a record-setting year. Jordan Reed looks like he's going to be a nice addition at tight end. But DeSean Jackson, another smallish, more speed guy. Of course, Garçon more of a possession guy. But you still don't have that difference maker at wide receiver in terms of being able to go anywhere on the football field and make that third down or that red zone catch.
Yeah, it's a good point for sure. I do think that this is an element that the offense really did need. Like you said, Garcon, a fantastic player, led the NFL in both receptions and targets last year. So I'm curious to see how the allocation of these throws goes now from RG3. But, they didn't have that real speed demon that can do some of the things, you know, has the potential to do some of the things Eric talked about a few minutes ago. So I think it is a nice addition. But, you know, like you said, is it the element that puts this offense over the top? I'm not quite sure. I'm just fascinated to see how the, like you said, the chemistry of all this is going to unfold, and there's a lot of moving parts here, but there's definitely the potential to make this a far more dynamic offense and one that really already had some dynamic qualities.
All right, guys, it was a bad week in Dallas. We hate to see any player get injured. The Cowboys have got a good one who seems to get hurt more than most. We'll talk about its impact in a moment. As I mentioned before the break, folks, it was a difficult week in Big D Dallas. The Cowboys suffered the loss for the season of, I think, one of the better and more underrated inside linebackers in the NFL in Sean Lee. But one of the reasons that he's underrated, guys, is that he is off the field so much, just an injury-plagued career. And now, on the first day of OTAs, he goes down with a torn ACL. The good news, he didn't tear anything else in the knee, so it's not a reconstruction, but it is still season-ending. And at this point, with the amount of time that Sean Lee has missed, Arthur, I think the first question is, what does it mean for even his future in Dallas?
Yeah, it's just such a tough blow. This time of the year, it's the one thing that coaches, you know, executives, fans are hoping not to see, is these type of severe injuries that we've already seen a handful of, unfortunately, around the league. This would be the biggest name thus far, of course, in Sean Lee. And just quickly, we should get out of the way that Zach Martin, you know, was, there was contact, but it did look to me, at least, in seeing the videos, that Sean Lee's knee had already began to buckle, and I just would hate for this rookie to begin his NFL career. I mean, whether I hate it or not, this is the way it's going down. This is the first thing his name's going to be attached to, so I do really think that that's sad. But as far as Sean Lee goes, it's not the same injury either. He's injured the knee on several occasions. He has had back issues. It seems like every part of his body has broken down at one time or another. And he's still a very young kid. He still has a serious financial investment from the Cowboys. So I don't think by any means they're getting ready to give up on him. But just a tough blow. We'll see how he's able to bounce back from this. And the Cowboys defense, how they're able to bounce back. They looked really, really bad, even with Sean Lee in the middle of it. Now they've got, it looks like a potential fourth round rookie, Anthony Hitchens, could step in. There's been the Brian Urlacher, maybe even the Pat Anger rumblings. These guys are still on the street and obviously have vast experience in this defense. I'm not sure they're the solutions. I don't know what the Cowboys defense is going to do.
Well, Eric Arthur touches on the other big piece of this, is that they were badly undermanned with Sean Lee. It looked like a really bad defense. He was the best player on it. Now, Devontae Holland actually stepped in, played the last two games in the middle for them last year after Lee went down. Looked pretty good. I'm hearing he'll probably get the first shot. Anthony Hitchens, Arthur mentioned, the rookie, will be there with him. In addition to Pat Anger, you've got Jonathan Vilma still out there. I don't think Urlacher's coming back, but you understand why Jerry Jones would enjoy that buzz. At the end of the day, this has got disaster written all over it for Rod Marinelli and the Cowboy defense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would throw Paris Lennon in there, another guy who played in the Super Bowl, kind of took over that middle linebacker role for the Broncos, and has played for Rod Marinelli in the past. That's another, he's a perfect fit in this kind of system. But boy, I mean, I don't care who you put in there, nobody's going to be in good in terms of versatility, especially against the pass. I mean, one of the leading interceptors among linebackers the last couple of seasons. And you have to question whether the Cowboys are going to get much on their investment. I mean, they put so much into Lee, and that's obviously a huge blow. And, you know, I want to piggyback off something Arthur said too, the Zach Martin pick. I think he's going to be a really good football player. I think he was the right choice, but we've already questioned this so much. They were ready to take Ryan Shazier before the Steelers grabbed him one pick before. And oh, by the way, the guy that they passed up to take Martin, Johnny Manziel, could end up being one of the rallying forces in the NFL if he does anything this season in Cleveland. So, you know, no matter what, Jerry Jones is going to lose in this situation. People are going to question it. You know, did they not try to trade ahead of the Steelers? Did they not take Manziel? You know, why did they take this Martin kid who was unfortunately involved in this injury? It's a crazy situation.
It really is, and I applaud Jones for not taking Manziel, and everybody who listens knows that's the first time I've ever applauded Jerry Jones, but I thought they did the right thing there. This is a really unfortunate injury. Guys, the news out of San Francisco OTAs is more interesting for what there is no news about. There's a no-show. And it's Vernon Davis, the tight end, who's become a leader of this team and this offense. Now, again, OTAs are voluntary. We need to be clear about that. Vernon Davis has 2 years left on a $42 million deal. Apparently, he wants a new deal. And Arthur, with Colin Kaepernick and Michael Crabtree both scheduled to be unrestricted free agents at the end of the season, the 49ers can't really give Vernon Davis a new deal. So you wonder how significant all this is.
Yeah, you said it. I mean, they've got some younger guys who have not yet gotten paid, and they're going to have to be first in line. You would think they do still have control of Vernon Davis for two more seasons. It's not like he was, unfairly compensated with this massive deal he did receive, $42 million. The problem is that it was very much front-loaded, so now he's got 2 years left, and there isn't much on it, and now he's unhappy. Of course, he's coming off a career year, but again, I'm not sure how much leverage there is. The Niners have went out of their way to continue, bolstering the pass-catching stable, and while they don't have a guy who can really get on top of a defense still like Vernon Davis, I think the timing of this is odd. I don't think that the 49ers really have a lot of flexibility here, and obviously, as you said at the top, Jim Harbaugh is really only response to this at this point. OTAs are voluntary. We expect Vernon Davis to be here eventually.
Guys, I've been fortunate to have a couple extensive one-on-ones with Vernon Davis. I love the guy. And you just have to wonder here, though. $42 million is $42 million, however it gets paid. I suspect Vernon Davis will be there when training camp starts. We've got to take one more quick commercial break, but we've got plenty more news around the NFL. Taylor Lewan, the first-round pick of the Titans, could be in more trouble than we thought. Eric Edholm, Arthur Arkush, and Hub Arkush bringing you Pro Football Weekly on the radio. I am Hub, and Eric, the story out of actually Ann Arbor, Michigan and Nashville, Tennessee is suddenly less promising for Titans first-round pick Taylor Lewan. Nobody disputed that he was talented enough and worthy of the 11th overall choice in the first round of the NFL draft. The assumption was, however, that some pending off-the-field legal issues were going away. Now it looks like maybe that's not the case. Lewan has been charged in a bar fight that took place in Ann Arbor last November following the Michigan-Ohio State game. He claimed that he was breaking up a fight. A Ohio State fan from Denver claims that Lewan punched the Ohio State fan in the mouth. And now Lewan's ex-girlfriend, who is the sister of teammate Drew DeLeo, the wide receiver, has said, no, Lewan's lying. He did punch the guy in the mouth. And when asked why she did not come out until now, she said, well, since I'm his ex-girlfriend, I thought everybody would thought I was being bitter, but I'm not. I'm just telling you, he punched him.
Right. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, she gave this statement to police back in January. So this is not like she, and I think the incident occurred early in December. So, I mean, obviously she was telling the police something and not running out to the press and saying, I know something you guys don't. So, I have to at least give her some credence here and wonder if there is some truth to this. And, supposedly there was the fact that Lewan supposedly told his mother, I knocked a dude out the next morning or something like, when they relayed the story over breakfast. So, this is obviously concerning for the Titans who don't, have a ton of positive attention around them right now. They take a player that maybe is somewhat unexpected. I think a lot of people were picking them to go in a different direction. And now you've got this, and you don't know exactly where Lewan fits in on this team. So not a great start to his career, even if he, as you pointed out, he has a lot of talent.
Yeah, right now he's the 11th overall pick in the first round, Arthur, but scheduled to be the swing tackle, backing up left tackle Michael Ruse and free agent signing Michael Orr, of course, from the famous movie in the Baltimore Ravens. Now, Ken Whisenhunt has said that he will have a chance to compete for a starting job. We would assume that it'd be over Orr on the right side. Ruse is probably in his last year in Tennessee on the final year of an expensive contract. In fairness to Lewan, the fact that he did punch him still doesn't mean that he's guilty of anything horrible. Apparently, Lewan amended his initial report to the police saying, well, maybe I punched the guy. So we don't know how this is going to play out. We do know that this kind of disturbance under, with a new coaching regime in town, and as Eric points out, a somewhat surprising pick, isn't a great start for Whisenhunt's administration.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And like you said, very odd that a non-quarterback taken 11th overall doesn't immediately project to the starting lineup. So I said it right away. I think it maybe makes the Michael Orr deal look even worse if you could plug Lewan in right away. I think a lot of people were scratching their head about the $20 million that Orr got. But hey, this is, I think among the most high-priced offensive lines in football. So they have a very clear plan as to how they want to build this team. Now we'll see if, Lewan is going to, get them off schedule or if he is in fact going to be an 11th overall pick who starts his career on the bench. But it'll be interesting to see.
Eric, you spent a number of years covering the NFC East and the Giants in particular for Pro Football Weekly when it was in print. Jason Pierre-Paul trying to come back from another surgery, this one shoulder surgery, 16.5 sacks 3 seasons ago, just 8.5 combined the last 2 years. He will be an unrestricted free agent after this season. Says he's 100% for the first time, looks good in minicamp. On the other hand, running back David Wilson, the former number one draft choice, has not been cleared to begin practicing from surgery he had to repair a broken neck. And broken neck sounds horrible. It's broken vertebrae in the neck. It is expected that he will eventually play again, but he has an MRI scheduled for next week, and they don't know yet if he's ready to go. Two very different rehab stories with the Giants.
Yeah, and I think obviously Pierre-Paul is, you know, they feel a little bit better about that situation. And, you know, can they get by without David Wilson being healthy? I think they can, even though he was a first-round pick. They brought in Rashad Jennings. You know, they still have Peyton Hillis, so I thought played pretty well considering the circumstances. And they drafted Andre Williams, and I thought he'd go a little higher in the fourth round. But Williams is the kind of guy who, you know, carried the ball a ton. Boston College guy Tom Coughlin is a big fan of his. So they've got some bodies there. Yeah, it does, none of them really have the speed that Wilson does. But, you know, Pierre-Paul, I mean, this is a huge season for him. We saw him as perhaps the next great young defensive impact player. People were saying he was, you know, the next superstar at the position. But now that the responsibility really increases, Justin Tuck isn't there anymore. Mathias Kiwanuka's career has gone south. You know, Linval Joseph is off to Minnesota. You know, and you've got some dudes like Mike Patterson and Colin Jenkins. They're fine, but Pierre-Paul has got to be the guy, and he's had a few injuries that have derailed him, and we'll see if he can put it together this season.
And when Wilson does come back, he's got to solve a fumbling problem that had him on the bench more than on the field prior to the injury. We've got the Publisher's Pen right after this quick break.
And now with the Publisher's Pen, here's Hub Arkish.
Eric, thank you very much. And as we talked about the Washington Redskins in segment 4 of the program and said we'd get back to it, I think it's pretty easy to make what I hope is a fairly intelligent statement about this now. I personally have never been offended by the name Redskins. I've been offended by the use of it, and I understand why Native Americans would. I think in any other context, we would say shame on you for using that expression. When I say I've never been offended, it's because it's not the franchise's fault. It's not Daniel Snyder's fault. This happened over 80 years ago at a different time and a different place in society and in this country. But it's not over 80 years ago. It's today. And this has become very simple. The name has to go. It doesn't matter what percentage of the Native American community you're offending. You're offending some. Take the high road here, Dan Snyder. You can't win this one. You're not going to lose money. You may even make money by doing the right thing. Stop. Think about it. Use your head. There'll be some rebranding. There'll be some repurposing of dollars. But at the end of the day, you win if you do the right thing. We have to say goodbye now for this week, but our thanks as always to our outstanding engineer and producer, Randy Meyer, also Syndication Networks, our home studio and syndicator, and most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.